Well, it's Monday. Another Monday, and we start off our Mondays, as you know, with an update on the news and current events in the Greene and Columbia County area with columnist Paul Smart on the job. How you doing, Paul?
Doing okay. It's, you know, as noted earlier, it's quite windy out there, which means the temperature is going to be dropping today, which is going to have its effects in terms of today was going to be the first day of Little League practice for a lot of towns around here, and dress warmly. Wear a sweater, wear a coat, wear long underwear.
Wednesday morning's prediction is a chance of snow showers between before 10 a.m.
Okay. Yeah, well, the other thing, we're talking to Andy Turner, who's been involved with the radio station for quite a while and was the head of Cornell Cooperative Extension in the region. Talking to Andy over the weekend, he said, you know, there's going to be a freeze tonight and tomorrow night, and it could have some major impacts, given that a lot of fruit trees and other trees have started to blossom in a way that usually doesn't occur for another month and a half. And so no one's sure exactly what's going to happen, because this is not a situation that's happened before. So if you can protect your trees over the next two nights, if not, pay attention to them and beware that we could face some problems with our fruit harvest over the coming year.
Yeah, no question about it. Anyone who has blossoms on their trees now are going to have a problem tonight, because the low is going to be around 20 degrees.
Yep, and I think it's in the 20s tomorrow night as right. Well. And then that possibility of snow. Ooh, Lord.
Yeah.
Ooh, Lord.
How about that?
if looking to warm up over the next couple days, Bread and Puppet Theater is down here from Vermont. They were performing here in Hudson over the weekend at TSL Warehouse here on Columbia Street. And they're in Catskill right now, and this morning they're going to be doing a rehearsal for a performance of Upriser Calisthenics. The performance is taking place at noon tomorrow in Brando's Alley, kind of opposite just off of Church Street, opposite the Greene County Legislative Building in Catskill. There's going to be a rehearsal today starting at 11 a.m., and anybody who's interested in being involved should head over to the Greene County Council for the Arts offices at 398 Main Street this morning, and it should be a lot of fun. There'll be music, and if you're feeling a little chill, just march. That's always.
I'm actually going to try to get a hold of them. Galen contacted me this morning about them. See if I can get them to come on the air and talk to us.
Possibly to it would be tomorrow morning, but right. they were on, I guess, on Friday as well.
Oh, so. Okay.
Now the big news this week, what's coming up is they're going to try to hammer out a budget up in Albany. And so, if you're using metaphors, the one most usually used when it comes to budget hashing out time is horse trading. There's going to be a lot of horse trading going on up in the Capitol over the next few days. Governor Cuomo, according to the Times Union's Capital Confidential, is pushing for a health insurance exchange in the state budget, or possibly using an executive order to do it. That's one of those terms that, you know, I guess it opens up the idea of having a number of options for getting health insurance coverage. Having looked into, you know, such options before, it seems that the more options one has, it just kind of ends up being more confusing. I know every time I've gone to look through these things, I just kind of throw up my hands at a certain point and say, whatever. And that, you know, one wonders whether that's built into the whole plan. that kind of throwing up the hands and saying whatever. The other things that are kind of, as Capital Confidential calls them, flashpoints in the budget talks this week, that there's a quite a bit of money that's being discussed for competitive education grants. And this is to help ease school districts over the 2% tax cap, which was mandated last year. And that was mandated without pulling away, some of the mandates in terms of how districts transport students, how they deal with special education, and most importantly, how they deal with their teacher contracts. And the way things stand now, and I've kind of been dealing with this in some other districts outside of our area, but it's also popped up in both Columbia and Greene counties, is that when a school district can't reach an accord on a new contract, there's a thing called the Taylor Law, and there's some that was passed, I believe it was in the late 1970s, and one of the clauses in the Taylor Law says that if there's no new contract, you stay at in the terms of your previous contract until that new contract can be decided upon. What's happening is that a lot of the old contracts are now about 3 years old, and they were set into place at a time before the recession hit as deeply as it did. And so they have built into them, 5% annual pay raises and hefty insurance co-pays, which are all fine and good. But what's starting to happen, and it actually began last year, is that in a lot of communities that are particularly hard hit, they're starting to chafe at the idea of paying taxes for raises for others in their community while they're in danger of losing their houses. And it's created a very bad dynamic in a lot of places. The idea behind these competitive education grants, there was a pot of money that came through at the beginning of last week or the week before that, which has helped ease some of that. And now there's an idea of districts competing for more money to help assuage this hit that a lot of districts are taking, in particular the taxpayers in those districts are taking. So that's one of the elements that's in play in terms of the budget battleground for the week. The other has to do with whether member items will be revived. And member items were something that disappeared when they were labeled 2 years ago when everybody was talking Tea Party. They were labeled as pork expenditures. The other way of looking at them, those who support them, and a lot of not-for-profits and smaller government entities in areas like ours support member items, is because it brings money down at the discretion of the assembly person or state senator for smaller projects within an area. So it's a way of getting funding for a new fire truck if needed, or sidewalk projects or arts development or community development projects. With those out of the picture, it meant that everybody was kind of struggling equally, but it also meant that there was less money coming into some communities that had lost a lot of their business. And so that's back on the plate, as well as hydrofracking in terms of there's a lot of talk of whether the state should fund a study on the health impacts of hydrofracking or not. And, normally one would say, yes, study such things. But there are a lot of people saying, well, we can't afford it. And then there are a lot of people behind those saying we can't afford it who are kind of egging that on as a way of backing fracking.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The strange thing there is that one of the largest lobbying groups behind fracking right now are farmers, not the small sort of farmers, that are working with specialty crops, as we see here in Columbia County and to a certain extent in Greene County, but more larger dairy farmers, et cetera, off in the middle of the state where they're facing difficulties and are looking for ways of pulling more income from their land. And the idea is that by leasing land for oil development, it'll allow them, to ease their lives some. And it's, it's fracking is a very complex battleground.
And it always pits the desire of one person to increase their standard of living, their income, against another person's desire to make sure that the environment is safe.
Right. And then the hottest battlegrounds are in places where it's not actually going to take place. And so what happens is that you're dealing with whole swaths of the state in a theoretical fashion. Whereas once you go into like Chenango County or some of these places, it's a whole different sort of meeting that goes on. There's one thing I've noticed in the past week. A number of major environmental battles around the state have shifted in a direction that was sort of unsuspected for a lot of people. There's a large development just south of Kingston called Williams Lake, one of these massive
things. Yes,
and that's
yes.
been going on for years and years, and it affected the local election last year, which saw all the Democrats who were running lose in a town that had been traditionally Democrat. And now the new town board has, there was an information meeting on Williams Lake that took place last Wednesday. And a huge number of people, a majority, came out saying, let's just move on with this project. And we're shouting down those who had environmental objections to it, which is rare. That hadn't happened in the last 5 years.
Well, what exactly are they planning on doing with Williams Lake? It's a gorgeous lake.
It's a gorgeous lake. They want to put in a large development and take down the old hotel. And it's, it's one of those things where you go, I don't know. But there's a lot of old time, and it's one of those things that where it's pitting those who are old-timer in town and say, look, we've been struggling here our whole lives, give us a chance to make some money off of something like this, versus, and the forces that are against it tend to be newer to town. And, mm-hmm. and this is an unfortunate way that things break down a lot of times. That's, been the dynamic up in, around the Bel Air Resort, and also the dynamic to a certain extent around the Carvel property, the Durst development down in Pine Plains off of the Taconic State Parkway. And, we also saw it play out to a certain extent in, the dredging of the river and St. Lawrence Cement and a lot of these
right.
battles. And it's, to a certain extent, it's kind of a lot of locals saying, look, it's our town. We get to decide what we want. And it's almost like a defensive crouch without any direct influence from the project
right.
itself. But, this was also, just kind of moving on, this was also reflected to a certain, in quite a number of ways, in our local elections last week, which, the last we spoke, we were leading up to them. The WGXC's newsroom has always did a wonderful job reporting the results. The one set of results that we're not going to get for a while is the special election for the state assembly person to take over the old post held by Marcus Molinaro, which is a large chunk of Columbia County and a large portion of Dutchess County, where it was Democrat Dee Dee Barrett versus Republican Richard Wager. And at the end of the election, and this is the 103rd Assembly District, at the end of the election, Barrett was ahead of Wager by, under 300 votes. The interesting thing was that the Republicans were leading in Dutchess County and Democrats were leading fairly substantially in Columbia County. Right now it comes down to about 1,000 absentee ballots that have yet to be counted, which is a lot, given that that's about, you know, 1/11th of the entire vote. Which is,
yeah, but that was last Tuesday. They haven't counted those 1,000
ballots. No, they don't.
Yet?
They don't get counted until, I believe, it's April 2nd or 3rd.
Oh,
yeah, it had that. It's April 3rd, I believe it is. That Monday is when they start counting. And what, you know, there has to be a certain amount of time for stragglers to come in. And then there's a lot of legal back and forth about, you know, which ones get counted, which ones don't get counted, how they've been, you know, and that surfaced in Hudson recently, where there was, you know, some question about just the carrying of ballots. And you know, we've become so divided with these elections that, you know, they come down to very, you know, strict laws and interpretations of laws. But it's always been that way, too. This is, you know, we were a frontier for a long time, and we're still a frontier in many ways.
In many ways.
But going back and taking a look at the local elections, you know, there were some places where incumbents just didn't do that well, you know, and it seemed at first that it was just another one of these races where it was newcomers knocking out incumbents. But if you look more closely, you know, the fascinating ones in Columbia County were in Chatham and in Philmont. In Chatham, where it was quiet for a long time, and suddenly it turned out that the incumbent trustee, George Grant, was running alongside the former mayor of 32 years?
32 years,
yeah,
right.
Paul Boehm, whose brother had been the police chief.
Yeah.
And they didn't win election. It was two newcomers, Adrian Morrell, who's tied in with the Clark Foundation over in Williamstown, and Lenore Packett, who's involved with pre-K education in town, and they just kind of swept in pretty strongly. Which,
yeah, they won by a large margin.
And the same thing happened in Philmont, where you know, the deputy mayor Brian Johnson lost his bid for re-election. It was okay; it was by two votes, and there's going to be some counting there, I'm sure. But you know, it was an incumbent, Barbara Segal, and then a newcomer, Matthew Perry, coming in, and what that indicates to a lot of people who watch these things is that it, you know, it's representing a shift in the makeup of the community, that it's not gentrifying, it has gentrified to a certain extent. And so there's a, you know, a wish to see something shift to reflect the changes in the community. In Greene County, you know, Athens saw Democrats just thoroughly trounce the one Republican running for the village board. And, you know, granted, he was a newcomer to town, but, you know, there was a time when just having the GOP line guaranteed you a win. But Athens is now looking pretty solidly Democrat at this point, which you know, is an indication of the way it's shifted over time. Similarly, in Catskill, the two Democratic endorsed candidates, Jim Chewins, who's a Republican who ran as an independent when he, the last time he ran, when he didn't get GOP backing, ran with Patrick McCullough, who's an incumbent, and they defeated the former trustee and GOP favorite Stanley Duchesne pretty solidly, which kind of shows that Catskill's shifting as well. Meanwhile, up in Coxsackie, Democrats were pretty much trounced, and it was and this happened in the town elections last fall as well, and this is without any discussion. I remember last fall we were trying to run a meet the candidates event, and the local Republican Party said, "Nah, you know, we have our way of doing it," and they certainly do. And you know, but there was a time 10, 15 years ago when the village of Coxsackie was pretty solidly Democrat, and you know, that indicates that there's been some change there. Either I'd say it's an combination of there was one group that owned a lot of buildings and had a kind of a voting block, the Seven Tribes, and they've sort of moved out of the village, which probably has had a huge effect. And then I suspect a lot of people who had been living in the village have moved out to country properties in the township, and so that, or farther afield, or they're not voting.
Right, that could be.
In village elections. And so that's ended up with quite a change over there. But now we're through all of that. The lawn signs seem to have disappeared pretty quickly.
Some of them.
Okay. Over on my side of the river, it's done pretty
actually,
well.
Actually, most of them are gone.
Yeah, and there's always a few that straggle stuck in some strange places. Election-wise, the big story here, and this has been kind of everywhere, was the break-in that occurred at City Hall in Hudson last week, and it turns out it was former Hudson City Alderman Quentin Cross, or he's alleged to be the person but has disappeared, and Cross had run into problems in the past he'd actually spent some time in the Hoosga in jail for illegal use of credit cards, which resulted in a conviction for fourth degree grand larceny. And this is all for somebody who, he was under 20. He was actually 18 when he was elected to the city council and looked like he was going to be, the big political up and comer.
Yeah.
And, actually he was in court, just before all this surfaced in the past week, talking about how he was going to make restitution for the $16,000 he owed on those credit cards, and was saying he was going to be heading off to China to teach English there, and who knows if he made it to China or not, but that's a story that's going to resurface in this coming week. The other fascinating stuff, over in Coxsackie, they have an annual Trooper Brinkerhoff Memorial Bicycle Race, and it went off on Saturday, which, as we all know, was just a gorgeous day, and especially for bicycling, it wasn't too cold, wasn't too hot, and it was their biggest yet, and everybody's looking at it as a sign of resurgence in Coxsackie. Over on this side of the river, a fascinating little thing is that two rabid animals were found in Columbia County. One was a cat in Niverville, and then there's a skunk, a rabid skunk bit a pet goat over in Gallatin, which is kind of the Ancrumdale sort of area. And it just goes to show we're in that season. The animals are coming out, and they're not just confused by the weather like us. there's also instance of rabies. The other thing to be aware of is that tick season and all these pest seasons have started a little early this year and are expected to be pretty severe over the coming year. We'll have more of that on some of the health shows on WGXC.
The ticks are back in full force.
Yep. School-wise, we're still in the budget breakdowns, and by next week at this time, we should have a sense of who's running for a school board election or re-election. So far, the big news in Hudson is that the school superintendent, Jack Howe, who announced at the end of last Monday's Board of Education budget workshop that he's going to retire when his contract comes to an end on June 30th, which could indicate some pivotal change in the Hudson School District, but we're not quite sure. And the person who'll be able to address that beautifully will be our station manager, Lynn Sloniker, who has been covering Hudson school issues for quite a while at this point.
We'll have Lynn on in this time slot tomorrow.
Yep. And then you know, it's kind of fascinating that, that Columbia Green Community College is starting to talk about the possibility of building student housing on their campus. You know, they're doing feasibility studies and or seeking to have a feasibility study, and it's, you know, it's fascinating. It's not just as a way, you know, when a community college is looking at something like this, it's not simply as a way of kind of building a hotel-like situation so people from the far reaches of Columbia and Greene counties can have a place to stay when they're visiting school, thus increasing the involvement. It's a way of making money.
Yeah, so, of course.
Yeah, you know, and you know, so we'll see how that, you know, moves along. Up in Ravenna, which is on in southern Albany County and on the edge of our, you know, solidly in our listening area, there's a fascinating thing that came up through the Greene County news last week about one former school board member and board candidate, Kathy DeLuca, charging that a current board member, Rodney Kraskowski, resigned from the school board because he's heavily involved in a group called Sovereign Citizenry. And Sovereign Citizenry is one that yeah, it doesn't pop up that often. There's a big court case down in Ulster County. These are folks who basically don't believe in taxes or you know, a lot of what the rest of us, you know, the responsibilities of being a U.S. citizen.
Right.
And so the question is, you know, can he be, you know, a good board member, especially he was appointed director of finance as well, when, you know, he does not pay property or school taxes himself. And you know, and what's fascinating is that, you know, this is all unfolding in tandem with, you know, a budget process where they're talking about cutting sports programming and music programming, art programming, the drama club, and all the students in Ravenna are starting to get together and you know, doing petitions and showing up at board meetings saying, hey, we want these programs. This is an essential part of our education and not just a budget matter. You know, the other thing coming up this week in those talks up in Albany is that Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver and a number of others in the Democratic majority in the State Assembly are starting to push. You know, there's been all this talk from Cuomo over the last year about teacher report cards, and the counterbalance to that is a push now to say, look, we can have the teacher report cards, but let's not go making them public. And this is a battle I've been having with my publishers at you know, the newspaper I edit, you know, who want to publish all teachers' salary numbers, and I'm like, you know, that's very divisive and kind of dangerous. You know, there are some matters that can stay private, but you know, this is until the economy is solidly okay again.
I just don't understand when teachers became the new whipping boys.
It was a little over a year ago,
yeah,
in Wisconsin, and it came as a result of the Tea Party language about you know, that the biggest problem was government spending and tax spending and not private spending, you know, or private business. And it's all a reflection of that. To end on a much more positive note, there were over 70 people showed up on Saturday morning for the Greater Hudson Promise Neighborhood Initiative, and there'll be more reporting on this over the coming weeks. Through Catholic Charities in the Hudson City School District has gotten a $400,000 planning grant for the Promise Neighborhoods program, which comes out of the United States Department of Education. And there's this whole process starting up of people kind of re-envisioning how to engage this community of Hudson in better ways through its schools and through the arts and through community of involvement. And supposedly it was, you know, a great series of discussions. We'll have people on air all this week in the coming weeks talking about this and the promise of this. It's ongoing, so we'll also be updating everybody on how to get involved and have input into this process. Across the river, there's a similar movement in the village of Hunter, which got almost 400,000 in a New York State Main Street revitalization grant to help kind of rebuild infrastructure and kind of beautify the Main Street there, which is, it's like a one street town, but Tannersville, its neighboring village, did quite well at rebuilding itself, and they're trying to kind of move, create some cohesion within the larger town of Hunter, and you know, it's a good way of starting to move things forward over there. Wayne Speenberg, the head of the county legislature over in Greene County, gave his state of the county speech and sort of as expected, whipped on the New York City Department of Environmental Protection, you know, which controls a lot of the watershed, and whipped on New York State for, in an odd way, for passing a property tax cap without getting rid of a bunch of mandates at the same time. So, you know, it was a, you know, fairly fiery speech, but you know, it is a legislative election year over there,
right?
So, you know, those things play in. And then kind of a final little thing is that it turns out that the old Irving School in Catskill, which has been sitting, you know, it was almost completely renovated for high-end residential units for condos about 5-6 years ago, and then went into bankruptcy. It turns out that the bank holding the note, the Rhinebeck Savings Bank, they've owned it for the last 2 years, and they're now pushing to turn it into rentals to make it alive again, which is a good thing. It had been sitting kind of dormant for a while. It opens up the real estate market and shows some movement there, and it also indicates a possible way out of the catch 22 that's involved a huge chunk of Main Street in Catskill, where the former Union Mills development, which is a great space and was also redeveloped almost to the point of sale as co-ops and condos, kind of fell into a bad situation with its investors. And you know, maybe they can, if the rental market starts to pick up and Catskill can reinvent itself through that means, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. And then, you know, last Thursday, a lot of people from Greene County and Columbia County from all around the areas showed up over in Margaretville, which is outside of our listening area, but it's where the Catskill Watershed Corporation is based. And they had a large meeting on how to deal with future disasters, as occurred last August with Irene and Lee. And there was a lot of bright people there, a lot of presentations, and a lot of talk of just, you know, how do we reset our streams, deal with our bridges so that they don't serve as dams at times of major flooding, and just how to deal with all of this. Also, how to deal with flood insurance itself, where a lot of claims just are not being paid.
I don't understand how that can happen repeatedly when if you have flood insurance, well, this was a hurricane. If you have hurricane insurance, well, then what you really had was a flood. So they wind up not paying them.
Yeah, you know, there used to be a word for that handled such failures, and it was oversight. You know, there was a time when the public wasn't loath to provide oversight.
Right.
And that may have a lot to do with it. And it takes time to kind of reenact that level of oversight, especially when just oversight and any government action has become a battleground politically. And, you know, but that's where we are right now. And, of course, all eyes, you know, besides everything we've been talking about today, are going to be on that columned building down behind the Capitol in Washington where the Supreme Court's hearing.
That is correct.
Hearing a lot of argument, or 6 hours of argument, which on the one hand doesn't seem like a whole lot, but on the other hand, if you've ever argued with a six-year-old for half an hour, it's a lot. So
6 hours of argument is quite extensive in Supreme Court language.
Yep. So it's going to be a busy week, and in a way, the strange weather of the current week kind of reflects what's going to be going on politically, governmentally, and news-wise.